A one-time civil rights attorney turned religious terrorist. Fred Phelps is one of the most hated individuals in the U.S. As the leader of a cult-like church in Topeka, Kansas, Phelps would terrorize families at military funerals and other public venues, spewing his hate and brainwashing his followers. Truly a shell of a human. Today we discuss the dark history of the human cockroach that should have been eradicated from the earth sooner, Fred Phelps.
Sometimes the human mind goes to dark places. Sometimes those dark delusions turn into reality. A reality so shaded and gray, once all is said and done, the healthy mind is drawn into the documented retelling of these tragic events, trying to find logic, reason, and understanding where there may be none at all. This is the Dark Side of Wikipedia.
Fred Waldron Phelps Sr. was an American minister, or so he claimed, and civil rights attorney who served as pastor of the Westboro Baptist Church and became known for his extreme views against homosexuality and protests near the funerals of gay people, military veterans, and disaster victims who he believed were killed as a result of God punishing the U.S. for having bankrupt values and tolerating homosexuality. The Westboro Baptist Church, a Topeka, Kansas-based independent fundamentalist quote-unquote ministry that Phelps funded in 1955, has been called arguably the most obnoxious and rabid hate group in America. Its signature slogan, "God Hates Fags," remains the name of the group's principal website. In addition to funerals, Phelps and his followers, mostly his own immediate family members, picketed gay pride gatherings, high-profile political events, university commencement ceremonies, live performances of the Laramie Project, and functions sponsored by mainstream Christian groups with which he had no affiliation, arguing it was their sacred duty to warn others of God's anger. He continued doing so in the face of numerous legal challenges, some of which reached the U.S. Supreme Court, and near universal opposition and contempt from other religious groups and the general public. Laws enacted at both the federal and state levels for the specific purpose of curtailing his disruptive activities were limited in their effectiveness due to the constitutional protections afforded to Phelps under the First Amendment. Gay rights supporters denounced him as a producer of anti-gay propaganda and violence-inspiring hate speech, and even Christians from fundamentalist denominations distanced themselves from him. Although Phelps died in 2014, the Westboro Baptist Church remains in operation. It continues to conduct regular demonstrations outside movie theaters, universities, government buildings, and other facilities in Topeka and elsewhere, and is still characterized as a hate group by the Anti-Defamation League and the Southern Poverty Law Center. Fred Waldron Phelps Sr. was born on November 13, 1929, in Meridian, Mississippi. The elder of two children of Catherine Johnston and Fred Wade Phelps. His father was a railroad policeman for the Columbus and Greenville Railway, a devout Methodist. His mother was a homemaker. In 1935, Catherine Phelps died of esophageal cancer at the age of 28. Her aunt, Irene Jordan, helped care for Fred and his younger sister, Martha Jean, until December 1944, when the elder Phelps married Olive Briggs, a 39-year-old divorcee. Fred distinguished himself scholastically and was an Eagle Scout. He also was a member of Pi Kappa, a high school social fraternity, president of Young People's Department of Central United Methodist Church, and was honored as the best drilled member of the Mississippi Junior State Guard, a unit similar to the Reserve Officer Training Corps. He graduated high school at 16 years old, ranking 6th in his graduating class of 213 students, and was the class orator at his commencement. After graduating from high school, he received an appointment to the United States Military Academy at West Point, but after attending a tent revival meeting, decided to pursue a religious calling instead. In September of 1947, at the age of 17, he was ordained a Southern Baptist minister and moved to Cleveland, Tennessee to attend Bob Jones College. A combination of Phelps' failure to retain the West Point appointment, which his father had worked hard to obtain, his abandonment of his father's beloved Methodist faith, and his father's remarriage to a divorcee predicated a long estrangement from his father and stepmother, and by some accounts from his sister as well. Phelps apparently never spoke to his family members again and returned all of their letters, birthday cards, and Christmas gifts for his children unopened. Phelps dropped out of Bob Jones College in 1948. He moved to California and became a street preacher while attending John Muir College in Pasadena. The June 11, 1951 issue of Time magazine included a story on Phelps, who lectured fellow students about sins committed on campus by students and teachers, including promiscuous petting, evil language, profanity, cheating, teachers' filthy jokes in classrooms, and pandering to the lusts of the flesh. When the college ordered him to stop, citing a California law that forbade the teaching of religion on any public school campus, he moved his sermons across the street. In October 1951, Phelps met Margie Marie Sims and married her in May of 1952. In 1954, Phelps, his pregnant wife, and their newborn son moved to Topeka, Kansas, where he was hired by the East Side Baptist Church as an associate pastor. The following year, the church's leadership opened Westboro Baptist Church on the other side of town, and Phelps became its pastor. So here we are on the dark side of Wikipedia. This is one of the first episodes of 2021. We're recording this in October of 2020, so God knows what the hell the world's like in 2021, just to take note. But yeah, this has been one that I've wanted to get on the air for a long time. And you'll notice my intro was a little more dramatic. I don't know. I have more disdain for this individual than I think I do, like, almost anyone, including a lot of serial killers and such, because this piece of human excrement tormented so many people's lives in some of the most traumatic times, laying someone to rest. Just, I mean, I when he was alive, I was sitting there hoping and quite honestly praying that someone would just take a large Jeep and run him over. I'm amazed it never happened. It's the dark side of Wikipedia, everybody. My name's Tony Bruschi. Welcome. Our co-host today, Sean. And how are you this fine day?
Oh, I'm great. I just, I'm curious to know what you think of Fred Phelps.
Just throwing it all out there. That's how I feel.
Human cockroach, shell of a human. Boy, we have talked about a lot of folks, a lot of low-level folks, and that intro, man, I mean, you really want to be besties with this fella once you both make it to heaven. Although he may not be north, he may have gone south.
I'm pretty sure he's probably in some sort of flaming pit right now. At least that's what I hope. I hope he doesn't even have the right to haunt anybody. I hope he's just rotting away. I mean, I don't know. I mean, this guy was a personification of evil. And it's a personification of evil where you don't have to kill anybody to be such a horrible human being. Because as far as we all know, he wasn't a murderer or anything like that. But there's allegations and such of other types of abuse that have come out about him from people who have left his ministry. I don't even like calling it that, because it's like, it's not, I respect ministries. This was not a fucking ministry. This was a fucked up cult of crazy people full of hate and just vile, just the worst human feelings a human being can have. And that's what they ran on. And it's just, I don't know. To me, it's just, I don't know how the hell these people, quite honestly, have survived as long as they have. Because if they were, I run all these horrible scenarios through my head because that's how I am. If I were at a funeral for a loved one, or God forbid, a child or something, and these motherfuckers showed up, I would be there with a gun, and I would be, you know what, fucking lock me up at that point. You know, I would take them out and I would say, you know what, at least we're preventing them from doing this at other fucking people's funerals. Because I see no point in them existing. I mean, it's just utterly disgusting what they do. And I'm not advocating somebody do that or anything like that. But I'm saying what I think that's how I would feel if they were picketing something of my family. I think at that point I'd be so down and out of it if it was that close of a family member.
I would see no harm in just like, all right, this is my civic duty to remove these people from the face of the earth so they don't continue to torment other living humans. But holy shit, these are just disgusting individuals.
What's very interesting is when you look at a person and you say to yourself, how could you do something that is even worse than taking someone else's life? Obviously, as a murderer, that's
bad.
I don't think there's much worse you can do. But people such as this character that we're talking about today, you almost think, well, I mean, you could have just killed the person. You didn't have to continuously torment them and make their life a living hell and their friends and their families. Couldn't you have just put them out of their misery? Why did you have to continuously do all of these hatred things and take all these vile actions where you could have just killed them? They could have ended it, but he continued to affect so many people where a sinister individual, you have to think, wait a minute, I would think more of this person if they just killed somebody and are in jail. But to do what he did and to recruit others to do similar things, it's pretty sad where you would think more of a person if you would have just killed him opposed to what he did for years.
And it's weird. I mean, it's a weird combination of things to think of someone that way, because you naturally think, well, killing someone is the worst thing you can do. And in many ways it is. But to sit there and premeditatedly drive across the country with the sole intent of tormenting families that are suffering after their military son or daughter came back from war serving their country, or tormenting a family of someone whose son or daughter was gay. I mean, it's just utterly insane. And then to do that under the guise of God, under the guise of religion, is just utterly disgusting. And to me, it's like, how the fuck, you know, and I'm not anti-religion. I'm not anti this or that by any means. But I wonder, like, how the fuck did he not get struck by lightning? Why, you know, why didn't someone like that get struck down? Why is it that, you know, you can have, you know, innocent children and stuff, you know, be packing the halls of a place like St. Jude, yet Fred Phelps for so many years was able to run free and torment people left and right? And you go to the, well, everything happens for a reason and there's a purpose and this. What the fuck purpose was that? You know, if we get to ask that question someday when we're dead, that's going to be one of the first on my list. How the fuck did you let that one happen, or why? Because I don't understand it. And I don't know that there's a reason or what, other than just this is an example of human cruelty and what not to be. And if we need examples out there in our world of what not to aspire to, maybe that's it. But holy shit, you look at these people and you're just like, what the fuck is wrong with you? And the only explanation I think you can logically ever come to is they're brainwashed and it's a cult. And that is, we all know with cults and stuff, people are very capable of being brainwashed. I don't see how anyone with logical thinking could possibly act in the ways that he did and his followers do. It's without being brainwashed and truly have some sort of extreme mental illness going on that allows them to act in such a way.
What's very interesting is I think all of us yearn so much for a sense of belonging, being a part of a group, having others that enjoy us. And what is truly sad is it doesn't matter what group you belong to. If you're getting that feeling of appreciation and belonging, it doesn't matter if you're a member of a baseball team. It doesn't matter if you're a member of the Fred Phelps cult.
Yeah.
This is what we're going to do. So it all comes back to, I think, just human emotion and human feeling. And sadly, some people are so impressionable or naive or whatever you want to call it, that some evil masterminds can prey on people. And this gentleman, all too often in these stories, we see such sadistic people as very intelligent, very smart, being able to capitalize on the moment for evil, to think, well, what if they used all these traits that made them a piece of crap human for the better?
Yeah.
And this is evil stuff. And I think, to put it best, at least for me, I think, well, put put it out of its misery. If you're driving down the road and you hit a deer, I hope it died, you know, put it out of its misery. This gentleman lived to continue to torture, continue to keep people alive, and to continue to have them be more and more miserable.
Yeah, it just shows the extent as to the depravity and the extent that humans can go to torture other people and believe in it as a cause. And it's just so fucked up. So let's continue on with the deplorable life of Fred Phelps here on the Dark Side of Wikipedia. Although Fred's new church was obstinately Independent Baptist, Fred Phelps preached a doctrine very similar to that of primitive Baptists who believed in scriptural literalism, that Christian biblical scripture is literally true, and that only a predetermined number of people selected for redemption before the world was created will be saved on Judgment Day. His vitriolic preaching alienated church leaders and most of the original congregation, who either returned to Eastside Baptist or joined other congregations, leaving him with a small following consisting almost entirely of his own relatives and close friends. Fred was forced to support himself selling vacuum cleaners, baby strollers, and insurance later. Some of his 13 children were reportedly compelled to sell candy door-to-door for several hours each day. In 1972, two companies sued Beth Westboro Baptist for failing to pay for the candy being peddled by the children. Early civil rights career, Fred Phelps earned a law degree from Washburn University in 1964 and founded the Phelps Chartered Law Firm. However, in 1969, upon a finding of professional misconduct, authorities suspended him from practicing as a lawyer for 2 years. Phelps' first notable cases were related to civil rights and his involvement in civil rights cases in and around Kansas, and gained him praise from local African-American leaders. "I systematically brought down the Jim Crow laws of this town," he claimed. Phelps' daughter, Shirley Phelps Roper, was quoted as saying, "We took on the Jim Crow establishment, and Kansas did not take that sitting down. They used to shoot our car windows out, screaming." She added that the Phelps law firm made up one-third of the state's federal docket of civil rights cases. Phelps took cases on behalf of African-American clients alleging racial discrimination by school systems and predominantly Black American Legion posts, which had been raided by police, alleging racially biased police abuse. Phelps' law firm obtained settlements for some clients. Johnson versus Topeka Board of Education. Phelps' national notoriety first came from a 1973 lawsuit settled in 1978 on behalf of a 10-year-old African-American plaintiff, Evelyn Renee Johnson, against the Topeka Board of Education, which had in 1954 famously lost the pivotal racial discrimination case of Brown versus Board of Education, ending legal racial segregation in U.S. public schools, and against related local, state, and federal officials. In 1973, in the case, Phelps argued that the Topeka Board of Education, in violation of the 1954 ruling, had not yet made its schools equal, and by attending Topeka's East Side predominantly minority schools, the Black plaintiff had received an inferior education. Initially, Phelps attempted to file a case as a class action in the U.S. District Court of Kansas, asking the court to order an end to the alleged discrimination and suggesting that busing might be at least one remedy. Phelps also sought $100 million in actual damages, plus another $100 million in punitive damages, or alternatively $20,000 for each of the 10,000 students he claimed were in the aggrieved class of victims. Nevertheless, the federal district and appellate courts denied the class action filing, limiting the case to Phelps' initial plaintiff, Evelyn Johnson, alone. The case fueled a national debate about racial integration of schools and prompted the U.S. Department of Health, Education, and Welfare by 1974 to order the Topeka Board to develop corrective remedies. While Topeka's school board essentially offered no contest to the charges, it did not confess to them either. However, it claimed to settle the matter on the guidance of the board's insurance provider for $19,500. While the settlement drew some praise, some controversy arose when the judge, at the request of the school board's insurance company, which paid the settlement with the apparent acceptance of the plaintiff and her attorney, Phelps, ordered the settlement amount kept secret. Phelps claimed he would file more such cases as class actions, though the insurance company stated it would not pay for any more of them. later civil rights career. In 1986, Phelps sued President Ronald Reagan over Reagan's appointment of a U.S. ambassador to the Vatican, alleging this violated separation of church and state. The case was dismissed by the U.S. District Court. Phelps' law firm, staffed by himself and family members, also represented non-white Kansas in discrimination action against Kansas City Power and Light, Southwestern Bell, and the Topeka City Attorney, and represented two female professors alleging discrimination at Kansas universities. A defeat in a civil rights suit against the city of Wichita and others on behalf of Jesse O. Rice, fired executive director of Wichita Civil Rights Equal Employment Opportunity Commission, among other causes, would lead to further legal actions, ending in Phelps' disbarment and censure. In the 1980s, Phelps received awards from the Greater Kansas City Chapter of Blacks in Government and the Bonner Springs branch of the NAACP for his work on behalf of black clients. However, in 1994, a self-published book by John Michael Bell arrived that although Phelps worked on behalf of many black clients, he reportedly expressed racist views. One of his sons, Nate, stated that Phelps largely took civil rights cases for money rather than principle. Nate said that his father held racist attitudes and he'd use slurs against black clients. They would come into his office, and after they left, he would talk about how stupid they were and call them dumb N-words. His sister Shirley denies Nate Phelps' account and claims he never used racist language. A formal complaint was filed against Phelps on November 8, 1977 by the Kansas State Board Law of Examiners due to his conduct during a lawsuit against a court reporter named Caroline Brady, which had failed to have a court transcript ready for Phelps on the day he asked for it. Although it did not affect the outcome of the case, Phelps sued her for $22,000. In the ensuing trial, Phelps called Brady to the stand, declared her a hostile witness, and then cross-examined her for nearly a week, during which he accused her of being a slut, tried to introduce testimony from former boyfriends whom Phelps wanted to subpoena, and accused her of a variety of perverse sexual acts, ultimately reducing her to tears on the stand. Phelps lost the case, according to the Kansas Supreme Court. The trial became an exhibition of a personal vendetta by Phelps against Caroline Brady. His examination was replete with repetitation, badgering, innuendo, belligerence, irrelevance, and immaterial matter, evidencing only a desire to hurt and destroy the defendant. The jury verdict didn't stop the onslaught of Phelps. He was not satisfied with the hurt, pain, and damage he had visited on Caroline Brady. In an appeal, Phelps prepared affidavits swearing to the court that he had eight witnesses whose testimony would convince the court to rule in his favor. Brady obtained sworn, signed affidavits from those eight people in question, all of whom said that Phelps had never contacted them and that they had no reason to testify against Brady. Phelps was found to have made false statements in violation of DR 7102. On July 20, 1979, Phelps was permanently disbarred from practicing law in the state of Kansas, although he continued to practice in federal courts. In 1985, nine federal judges filed a disciplinary complaint against Phelps and his five children, alleging false accusations against the judges. In 1989, the complaint was settled. Phelps agreed to stop practicing law in federal court permanently, and two of his children were subpoenaed for a period of 6 months and 1 year, respectively. So, it's one of these weird things with this guy where if you only read like the first chapter of the book, you go, oh, okay, he was a civil rights attorney. That's not bad. And then you find out just he was doing it for money, allegedly, and the alleged, attitudes that he truly had going on. And none of it squares up with the rest of his life either. Typically, if you're out, for the rights of others, you don't end up being a cult leader that just preys on emotionally destroying people and damaging people in the most difficult times of their lives. It makes zero sense. It's almost like we're talking about a completely different individual. It makes you wonder if there was like some sort of psychotic break that happened somewhere in that window of time that was never corrected or healed, and then it just continued off the rails to such an extent to the point of him just eventually dying.
I think anybody, you go through life and you have your demons. I think everybody has them on a lesser scale to a certain extent. And then they get to a point where they have no idea how to deal with it. Some become alcoholics, some become drug addicts, some bury themselves into their career for the better, and some are named Fred Phelps.
I don't understand how that happens, or how you go from one way to the other, unless the, you know, it's what's alleged in that book of he was never in it for the real reasons anyhow. You know, where on the surface, if you're just reading the cliff notes, it looks like he's trying to do good, but on the other end, it's not at all. It's slimy. It's there for look at me, and it's there for him to line his pockets with money on the injustices that others are facing. And that seems to be ultimately what he was up to back then, you know, without his, you know, being blatantly obvious about it as he got, you know, older and then turned into his, you know, cult leading insanity with his picket signs and such.
I there's some ways to analyze people and from their childhood, and you can kind of put two and two together. I look at this guy as an anomaly. Yeah. I really don't have a, clearly talking about these people going through who knows what. It's not as though we're experts or we can talk from experience, but usually if it's a standard serial killer, he probably was bullied as a young child, or his parents, or this, that, or the other. This guy kind of fell through the cracks as far as trying to give some type of validation or reasoning of how he turned out the way he did.
He really is kind of an enigma. And I think that's what I've always found so fascinating about, because I've always been drawn to weird people like this, not in a way of like, ooh, they have good ideas, but just like trying to figure them out psychologically. And he really is an enigma. It's none of it makes sense other than shit's not firing right in this person's brain. And I don't think there's any other explanation for it other, you know, there doesn't seem to be, unless there's stuff that we don't know about that he never told anybody. Some sort of abuse, some sort of trauma that really, really fucked him up. I don't know, but it's just like, what the fuck? So let's continue on. We're going to learn more about family life now. And the story of Fred Phelps here on the dark side of Wikipedia. Phelps married Margie M. Sims in May of 1952, a year after the couple met at Arizona Bible Institute. They had 13 children, 54 grandchildren, and 7 great-grandchildren. Nathan Phelps, Fred Phelps' estranged son, claims that the elder Phelps was an abusive father and that he, Nate, never had a relationship with him when he was growing up, and that the Westboro Baptist Church is an organization for the father to vent his rage and anger. He alleges that in addition to hurting others, his father used to physically abuse his wife and children by beating them with his fists and with the handle of a mattock to the point of bleeding. Phelps' brother Mark has supported and repeated Nathan's claims of physical abuse by their father. Since 2004, over 20 members of the church, mostly family members, have left the church and his family. Phelps described himself as an old-school Baptist and stated that he held to all 5 points of Calvinism. Phelps particularly highlighted John Calvin's doctrine of unconditional election, the belief that God has elected certain people for salvation before birth, and limited atonement, the belief that Christ only died for the elect and condemns those who believe otherwise. Despite claiming to be an old-school Baptist, he was ordained by a Southern Baptist church and was rejected and generally condemned by old-school Baptists. Phelps viewed Arminianism, particularly the views of the Methodist theologian William Elbert Munsey, as a worse blasphemy and heresy than that heard in all filthy Saturday night fag bars in the aggregate in the world, quote unquote. In addition to John Calvin, Phelps admired Martin Luther and Bob Jones Sr. and approved, quoted a statement by Jones that what his country needs is 50 Jonathan Edwards turned loose in it, quote unquote. Phelps particularly held to equal ultimacy, believing that God Almighty makes some willing and he leads others into sin, a view he said is Calvinist. However, many theologians would identify him as a hyper-Calvinist, meaning beyond or above or extreme. Phelps opposed such common Baptist practices as Sunday school meetings, Bible colleges and seminaries, and multi-denominational crusades. Although he attended Bob Jones University and worked with Billy Graham in his Los Angeles crusade before Graham changed his views on a literal hell and salvation, Phelps considered Graham the greatest false prophet there was. He also condemned large church leaders such as Robert Schuller and Jerry Falwell, as well as all Catholics. All of Phelps' demonstrations and other activities during the last 50 years of his life were conducted in conjunction with the Congregation of Westboro Baptist Church, an American unaffiliated Baptist church known for its extreme ideologies, especially those against gay people. The church is widely described as a hate group and is monitored as such by the Anti-Defamation League and Southern Poverty Law Center. It was headed by Phelps until his later years, when he took a reduced role in the activities of the church and his family. In March of 2014, church representatives said that the church had not had a defined leader in a very long time, and church members consist primarily of his large family. In 2011, the church stated that it had about 40 members. The church is headquartered in a residential neighborhood of the west side of Topeka, Kansas, 3 miles west of the Kansas State Capitol. Its first public service was held in the afternoon of November 27, 1955. The church has been involved in actions against gay people since at least 1991, when it sought a crackdown on homosexual activity at Gage Park, 6 blocks northwest of the church. In 2001, Phelps estimated that the WBC had held 40 pickets a week for the previous 10 years, in addition to conducting anti-gay protests at military funerals. The organization pickets other celebrity funerals and public events that are likely to gain media attention. Protests have also been held against Jews, and some protests include WBC members stomping on the American flag. There have been several lawsuits against the Westboro Baptist Church. Snyder versus Phelps. On March 10, 2006, WBC picketed the funeral of Marine Lance Corporal Matthew A. Snyder, who died in combat in Iraq on March 3, 2006. The Snyder family sued Fred Phelps for defamation, invasion of privacy, and intentional infliction of emotional distress. On October 31, 2007, WBC, Fred Phelps, and his two daughters, Shirley Phelps Roper and Rebecca Phelps Davis, were found liable for invasion of privacy and intentional infliction of emotional distress. On October 31, 2007, WBC, Fred Phelps, and his two daughters, Shirley Phelps Roper and Rebecca Phelps Davis, were found liable for invasion of privacy and intentional infliction of emotional distress. A federal jury awarded Snyder's father $2.9 million in damages and later added a decision to award $6 million in punitive damages for invasion of privacy and an additional $2 million for causing emotional distress, a total of $10.9 million. The lawsuit named Albert Snyder, father of Matthew Snyder, as a plaintiff, and Fred W. Phelps Sr., Westboro Baptist Church, Inc., Rebecca Phelps Davis, and Shirley Phelps Roper as defendants, alleging they were responsible for publishing defamatory information about the Snyder family on the internet, including statements that Albert and his wife had raised Matthew for the devil and taught him to defy his creator, to divorce, and to commit adultery. Other statements denounced them for raising their son Catholic. Snyder further complained the defendants had intruded upon and staged protests at his son's funeral. The claims of invasion of privacy and defamation arising from comments posted about Snyder on the Westboro Baptist website were dismissed on First Amendment grounds, but the case proceeded to trial on the remaining 3 counts. Albert Snyder, the father of Matthew A. Snyder, testified, "They turned this funeral into a media circus and they wanted to hurt my family. They wanted their message heard and they didn't care who they stepped over. My son should have been buried with dignity, not with a bunch of clowns outside." In his instructions to the jury, U.S. District Judge Richard D. Bennett stated that the First Amendment protection of free speech has limits, including vulgar, offensive, and shocking statements, and that the jury must decide whether the defendant's actions would be highly offensive to a reasonable person, whether they were extreme and outrageous, and whether these actions were so offensive and shocking as to not be entitled to First Amendment protection. WBC sought a ministerial base on the alleged prejudicial statements made by the judge in violations of the gag order by the plaintiff's attorney. An appeal was also sought by the WBC. On February 4, 2008, Bennett upheld the ruling but reduced the punitive damages from $8 million to $2.1 million. The total judgment then stood at $5 million. Court liens were ordered on church buildings and Phelps Law Office in an attempt to ensure that the damages were paid. An appeal by WBC was heard on September 24, 2009. The federal appeals court ruled in favor of Phelps and Westboro Baptist Church, stating that their picket near the funeral of Matthew A. Snyder is protected speech and did not violate the privacy of the service member's family, reversing the lower court's $5 million judgment. On March 30, 2010, the federal appeals court ordered Elbert Snyder to pay the court costs for the Westboro Baptist Church, an amount totaling $16,510. Political commentator Bill O'Reilly agreed on March 30th to cover the cost pending appeal. A writ of certiorari was granted on an appeal to the Supreme Court of the United States, and the oral argument of the case took place on October 6, 2010. Margie Phelps, one of Fred Phelps' children, represented the Westboro Baptist Church. The court ruled in favor of Phelps in an 8-1 decision, holding that the protester's speech related to a public issue and was maintained on public sidewalk. Chief Justice John Roberts wrote for the majority, "As a nation, we have chosen to protect even hurtful speech on public issues to ensure that we do not stifle public debate." Judge Samuel Alito, the lone dissenter, wrote, "Our profound national commitment to free and open debate is not a license for the vicious verbal assault that occurred in this case." Efforts to discourage funeral protests. On May 24, 2006, the United States House and Senate passed the Respect for America's Fallen Heroes Act, which President George W. Bush signed 5 days later. The act bans protests within 300 feet of national cemeteries, which numbered 122 when the bill was signed, from an hour before a funeral to an hour after it. Violators face up to a $100,000 fine and up to a year in prison. On August 6, 2012, President Obama signed Pub L-112-154, the Honoring America's Veterans and Caring for Camp Lejeune Families Act of 2012, which, among other things, requires a 300-foot and two-hour buffer zone around military funerals. As of April 2006, 9 states had passed laws regarding protests near funeral sites immediately before and after ceremonies. Florida increased the penalty for disturbing military funerals, amending a previous ban on the disruption of lawful assembly. On January 11, 2011, Arizona passed an emergency measure which prohibits protests within 300 feet of any funeral services in response to an announcement by the Westboro Baptist Church that it planned to protest at a 2011 Tucson shooting victim of Christina Green's funeral. These bans have been contested. Bart McQuarrie, having protested with Phelps on at least 3 occasions, filed a lawsuit in federal court challenging the constitutionality of Kentucky's funeral protest ban. On September 26, 2006, a district court agreed and entered an injunction prohibiting the ban from being enforced. In the opinion, the judge wrote, "Sections 5, 1B, and C restrict substantially more speech than that which would interfere with a funeral or that which would be so obstructive that funeral participants could not avoid it. Accordingly, the provisions are not narrowly tailored to serve a significant government interest, but are instead unconstitutionally overboard." The American Civil Liberties Union filed a lawsuit in Missouri on behalf of Phelps and Westboro Baptist Church to overturn the ban on the picketing of soldiers' funerals. The ACLU of Ohio also filed a similar lawsuit. In the case of Snyder versus Phelps, the Fourth Circuit Court of Appeals ruled that distasteful and repugnant protests surrounding funerals of service members were protected by the First Amendment. But attorneys for the service member's family appealed the decision on the grounds that such speech should not be allowed to inflict emotional distress on private parties exercising their freedom of religion during a funeral service. The Supreme Court heard oral arguments in the case on October 6, 2010 and ruled 8-1 in favor of Phelps in an opinion released on March 2, 2011. The court held that any distress occasioned by Westboro's picketing turned on the content and viewpoint of the message conveyed rather than any interference with the funeral itself and thus could not be restricted. People targeted by Phelps beginning in the early 1990s. Phelps targeted several individuals and groups in the public eye for criticism by the Westboro Baptist Church. Prominent examples included President Ronald Reagan, Princess Diana, Supreme Court Chief Justice William Rehnquist, National Football League star Reggie White, Sonny Bono, comedian George Carlin, The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, atheists, Muslims, murdered college student Matthew Shepard, children's television host Fred Rogers, Australian actor Heath Ledger, Comedy Central's Jon Stewart and Stephen Colbert, political commentator Bill O'Reilly, and critic Roger Ebert, Catholics, Australians, Swedes, the Irish, the U.S. soldiers killed in Iraq as well. He also targeted the Joseph Eastbrook Elementary School in Lexington, Massachusetts, center of the David Parker controversy. In 2006, they planned a protest at the funeral for five girls murdered during the West Nickel Mine school shooting in Pennsylvania, but decided to call it off, opting to spread their message on a local radio station instead. In 2007, he stated that they would target Jerry Falwell's funeral. Phelps' daughter, Shirley Phelps Roper, has appeared on Fox News Channel defending the WBC and attacking homosexuality. She and her children have also appeared on the Howard Stern radio show attempting to promote their agenda and church. Phelps' followers have repeatedly protested the University of Kansas School of Law's graduation ceremony. And in 2007, in wake of the Minneapolis I-35W bridge collapse, Phelps and his congregation stated that they would protest at the funerals of the victims. In a statement, the church said that Minneapolis is the land of the sodomite damned. I don't know what the fuck you call these people other than out of their fucking minds. Because, I mean, you have everything in that paragraph from hating Fred Rogers to protesting people who died in a bridge collapse. I mean, what the fuck could possibly be going through your mind that says, good idea, let's do that?
Did you ever watch a movie, maybe in a hotel room, or... it's, for whatever reason, it's not in English.
Okay.
Or you randomly
I've seen some. Okay.
Basically, what I'm saying is you don't understand it at all.
Yeah.
You hear it, but you don't understand it. And upon you reading this, I was paying attention. I heard it. No fucking sense was made. What? None.
None at all. And the fact that I mean, how I don't know. I guess I am such a justice oriented mind that then I start going, okay, so another human being who's involved in the court system had to actively say, yes, we'll take up your case, or yes, we'll even file this fucking case. And I guess it would be technically against the law, you know, to deny someone, you know, that. But at the same point, as a human being, couldn't you just immediately vomit onto the person and say, I'm sorry, I'm sick, I can't do this right now. And you just hope enough people are ill that just refuse to do it for their own reasons, you know, illness, something like that. But there, other people have to, like, play a role in their insanity in some way, shape, or form to get it to the courts that they get it to. And the fact that the courts end up saying... no, they're right. And then they end up having the father of the military veteran have to pay their fucking legal fees. Just is a prime example. We have prime example after prime example on the show of how fucked up and broken the United States legal system is. But I think this is another fucking prime example of how broken the United States legal system is. You know, and the arguments of, oh, no, it's protecting everyone's rights to this. No, it's not. It does not do that. It doesn't protect the rights of the innocent. This is sticking up for the rights of the non-innocent. This is sticking up for the rights of these hate-filled, fucking disgusting mutants that have this church in Topeka and are out to just cause torment. It is not protecting the right of the innocent at all when that's your nearly unanimous decision. That's the opposite of protecting the rights of the fucking innocent. And I don't understand how the fuck that they can get to those places in following law. It baffles the mind.
I think that's a situation, not being a law expert, is taking the emotion out of it, taking the, and this is the only reason I bring this up, is to protect the rights. It's not a right wrong. It's not a who's fucked up, who's not fucked up. It is a black, white, transactional. Okay, does it have the ingredients to be able to file this? Does it have the opportunity to then go to the next stage? And if it does, no matter how insanely fucked up it is of why we're actually taking the time to do this, it proceeds. And then as far as court costs and all this, that, or the other, someone's got to pay for it.
Yeah.
So sadly, it's a situation where you have the same defendants, prosecutor, you have the same transactions that occur, yeah. And it could be something that is something that does make sense. So again, I'm not insinuating it is okay, and I'm not insinuating that it is not fucked up, but mm-hmm. It doesn't matter the reason that this yeah. is in the courts. It is, you have A, you have B, and for this to proceed, and again, transactions to take place, whatever the findings, somebody's got to pay for the attorney time and the judge and all the paperwork and such. And you'd like to think that something is in place, is in law. So here's the deal. This does have to fast forward, and all this does need to be paid for. But if it involves like one of these six categories, AKA the Fred Phelps law, all of these costs, they go out the fucking window. We're just going to write it off because this is absolutely ludicrous.
Yeah.
That is something that would hopefully in modern time come to be, or a law that can be passed. Yes, it makes sense, I guess, that everything needs to be paid for. But in these situations, if it falls under the categories that regardless of the findings, the costs associated with this are written off and nobody needs to go through the fucked upness. And then, oh yeah, they have to have the financial hardship as well.
Yeah. I'm just baffled. Even when you take the emotions out of it and you're just looking at it, just the law standpoint and just, you know, here's the ingredients. It just doesn't add up to me. It's like, how the fuck did this get to that point? It's baffling. And I don't think anyone can make sense of what has gone on in the past with these people and the court filings. One can only hope that in the future, if these morons continue, that they can be stopped in one way, shape, or form. Again, I go back to, I am surprised that there has not been a vigilante. And I know that they have had issues where they've been attacked one way or another, but I'm surprised there hasn't been more of a vigilante attack on this group at some point in time for the just level of vile hate that they spew at people. And I know, like, then you're stooping to their level. Yes and no. I don't know. I just view when you have people that are doing this and a vigilante steps in and stops it for good, you're doing a service to the society and to people's emotions and the world, because then they won't keep doing it, because they can't keep doing it. And again, I'm not advocating for that by any stretch of the imagination. I'm just saying I am surprised that has not happened at some point with the sheer amount of protests that they've done and the nature of which protests they've conducted at military funerals and such, that there hasn't been somebody that just said enough and took the law into their own hands and said, look, if you guys aren't going to fucking stop them, I am. I'm really kind of amazed by that. The fact that there's crazy people out there that will do crazy things to innocent people, but we don't seem to have a lot of crazy people doing crazy things to crazy people. Maybe that, I don't know. Does that make sense?
Give it time. We're listening to this in early 2021.
Give it time.
That's a valid point, yeah. But it hasn't happened yet.
Yeah. It's like, I think someone, I mean, again, not advocating for it, but I don't know if Fred Phelps is buried somewhere or if he's cremated or what, but I think, wouldn't it be a great Halloween decoration to get his body and just like drag it around the town or something? If you could get it out of the grave as a grave robber, if you happen to be a grave robber. Again, not advocating for it, but that would be entertaining. That would be fucking entertaining.
Is that something you put on your resume? as far as past grave robber.
I mean, grave robber. I'm the guy who, So welcome to T-Mobile. We appreciate you coming in here. I know you got some experience in cellular technology. Tell me about what you've been doing professionally the last couple of years. Tell me what you did.
It's funny, you see a few career gaps. Well, I was incarcerated. Oh, yeah, we'll hire you.
What happened?
Well, it's semantics, really. I mean, you know, dug up a few dead guys. It's nothing major.
We're all about giving people second chances here at T-Mobile. Tell me, who did you dig up?
Fred. His name's just Fred, and he was, you may have heard about him.
Really? How?
Well, he picketed your son's funeral.
Oh, so. I remember Freddie. Yeah. Okay. So you dug.
He's actually in my trunk still. If you wanna.
No kidding.
I got a rental that I rented for like a week, but I never returned it. And they gave a credit card number. They needed a credit card number. It wasn't mine. I also have fraud and larceny.
Sure.
But
yeah.
His rotting corpse is in the trunk of my Corolla. If you wanna.
Well, we're all about third and fourth chances here at T-Mobile. So what I'd like to say is welcome aboard. And, you know, we're looking for some spooky Halloween decorations to put in the window this season. I think you've hit the jackpot. I can't wait. Keep them in there till about, I'd say, October 1st. Then, you know, bring them on in. And if you can plaster them up in the window next to the new iPhone models that are right over there, maybe even if you can, get them holding one of the iPhone models. That'd be great. And we're going to win the award for the best Halloween decoration here in South Forks Mini Mall. So welcome aboard.
I got to tell you, the 5G coverage in that cemetery when I was, digging them up, man, crystal clear when I was listening to my podcast. It's Dark Side of Wikipedia. Yeah. It was great.
Yeah. Well, welcome again. We're all about fifth and sixth chances here. So I think you're good. And welcome to the store.
13 kids, man. 13. There are people out there, husbands and wives. They're trying to have a baby, uno. This guy, 13.
Again, I go back. I like to have some semblance of faith or religion. I was brought up Lutheran, but there's just so many times in life and in this world, I just go, how the fuck is that right? How, you know, if there's someone up there controlling all this shit, you got people who are perfectly capable and of raising a loving, wonderful child, and they can't conceive. Yet these people are able to shit out 13 kids, and thankfully several of them said, "You're fucking crazy, I'm getting out of this family," but several stayed. But still, I mean, that's 13 people that had to endure that fucking insanity for that long of a period of time. And still, several are brainwashed and still there. And it's just fucking bizarre. I'll say allegedly brainwashed, alleged to everything about the living there. But that's my opinion or viewpoint on it. But it's just so fucking bizarre. It's just, there's so many things that aren't right. And this story and these people are the personification of it. Let's continue on with the lovely world and life. And the history of Fred fucking Phelps. In the movie Hate Mongers, members of the Westboro Baptist Church state their children were being accosted by homosexuals in Gage Park, about 1/2 mile from Phelps' home. Shirley Phelps Roper says that in the late 1980s, Fred Phelps witnessed a homosexual attempting to lure her then 5-year-old son, Joshua, into some shrubbery. After several complaints to the local government about the large amount of homosexual sex occurring in the park with no resulting action, the Phelps put up signs warning of homosexual activity. This resulted in much negative attention for the family. When the Phelps called on local churches to speak against the activity in Gage Park, the churches also lashed out against the Phelps family, leading to the family protesting homosexuality on a regular basis. In 2005, Phelps and his family, along with several other local congregations, held a signature drive to bring about a vote to repeal two city ordinances that added sexual orientation to a definition of hate crimes and banned the city itself from workplace discrimination based on sexual orientation. Enough signatures were collected to bring the measure to a vote. Topeka voters defeated the repeal measure on March 1, 2005 by a 53-47% margin. In the same election, Phelps' granddaughter, Jael, was an unsuccessful candidate for the Topeka City Council, seeking to replace Tiffany Mueller, the first openly gay member of the council. Phelps ran in the Kansas Democratic Party primaries 5 times, but never won. These included races for governor in 1990, 1994, and 1998, receiving about 15% of the vote in 1998. In the 1992 Democratic Party primary for U.S. Senate, Phelps received 31% of the vote. Phelps ran for mayor of Topeka in 1993 and 1997. Phelps supported Al Gore in the 1988 Democratic Party presidential primary election. In his 1984 Senate race, Gore had opposed a gay bill of rights and stated that homosexuality was not something that society should affirm, a position Gore had publicly changed by 2000 in his official position. Phelps stated that he supported Gore because of these earlier comments. In 1996, Phelps opposed Clinton and Gore's re-election because of the administration's support for gay rights. The Westboro congregation picketed a 1997 inaugural ball. In 1997, Phelps wrote a letter to Iraqi President Saddam Hussein, praising his regime for being the only Muslim state that allowed the gospel of our Lord Jesus Christ to be freely and openly preached on the streets. Furthermore, he stated that he would like to send a delegation to Baghdad to preach the gospel for 1 week. Hussein granted permission, and a group of WBC congregants traveled to Iraq to protest against the U.S. The WBC members stood on the streets of Baghdad holding signs condemning both Bill and Hillary Clinton, as well as anal sex. In 1994, Phelps was convicted of disorderly conduct for verbal harassment and received 2 suspended 30-day jail sentences. Phelps' 1995 conviction for assault and battery carried a 5-year prison sentence with a mandatory 18 months to be served before he became eligible for parole. Phelps fought to be allowed to remain free until his appeals process went through. Days away from being arrested and sent to prison, a judge ruled that Phelps had been denied a speedy trial and that he was not required to serve any time. On February 18, 2009, 2 days before the Westboro Baptist Church first UK picket, the United Kingdom Home Office announced that Fred Phelps and Shirley Phelps Roper would be refused entry and that other church members would also be flagged and stopped if they tried to enter Britain. In May of 2009, he and his daughter Shirley were placed on the Home Office's name and shame list of people barred from entering the UK for fostering hatred which might lead to their inter-community violence. In the media, in 1993, Phelps appeared on the first season episode of the talk show Ricky Lake, alleging that homosexuals and anyone who carries the AIDS virus deserves to die. When Phelps and his son-in-law Charles Hockenbarger, Phelps' daughter Rachel's husband, became increasingly belligerent, Lake ordered the Phelps family to leave the studio. During a commercial break, the two were forced off the set and escorted out of the building by security. After Phelps died, Lake tweeted that when he had been on the show, he had told her that she worshipped her own rectum, a remark that led her to take action offstage to have Phelps removed from the set. The Phelps family was the subject of a 2007 TV program, The Most Hated Family in America, presented on the BBC by Louis Theroux. 4 years after his original documentary, Theroux produced a follow-up program, America's Most Hated Family in Crisis, which was prompted by news of family members leaving the church. Phelps' son Nate has broken ranks with the family, and in an interview with Peter W. Klein on the Canadian program The Standard, he characterized his father as abusive and warned the Phelps family could turn violent. Writing in response to Phelps' death in 2014, Theroux described Phelps as an angry bigot who thrived on conflict and expressed the view that his death would not lead to any huge changes in the church, as he saw it as operating with the dynamics of a large family rather than a cult. Theroux returned for a third documentary in 2019 titled Surviving America's Most Hated Family. Kevin Smith produced a horror film titled Red State, featuring religious fundamentalist villain inspired by Phelps. Phelps appeared in a Union in Wait, a 2001 Sundance Channel documentary film about same-sex marriage, directed by Butler, after Phelps picketed Wake Forest Baptist Church at Wake Forest University over a proposed same-sex union ceremony. Fred Phelps preached his final Sunday sermon on September 1st, 2013. 5 weeks later, sermons resumed from various members. On March 15, 2014, Nathan Phelps, Phelps' estranged son, reported that Phelps was in very poor health and was receiving hospice care. He said that Phelps had been excommunicated from the church in August 2013 and then moved into a house where he basically stopped eating and drinking. His statements were supported by his brother Mark. Church spokesman Steve Darren declined to answer questions about Phelps' excommunication and denied that the church had a single leader. The church's official website said that membership status is private and did not confirm or deny the excommunication. Phelps died of natural causes shortly before midnight on March 19th of 2014 at the age of 84. His daughter Shirley stated that the funeral for her father would not be held because the church does not worship the dead. Phelps has been reportedly suffering from some form of dementia in his final year and started behaving very irrationally. This led to church members believing that God had condemned him. It has been claimed that Phelps had a softening of heart at the end of his life. According to accounts published in a memoir written by Phelps' granddaughter, Megan Phelps Roper, and reporting from the New Yorker citing former members of the church, this includes an incident in 2013 in which Phelps is said to have stepped outside the church and called over to members of Planting Peace, a nonprofit that bought a house on the other side and painted it with the LGBT rainbow, saying, "You're good people." In an interview with NPR, Megan Phelps Roper said this outburst was the proximate cause of Phelps being excommunicated, a claim that the church has denied. According to Phelps' grandson and former church member Zach Phelps Roper, Phelps' actions were regarded as rank blasphemy by church members. So, do you think it happened? Do you think at the very end, his delusions and his mental state that deteriorated the hatred and the long-running delusions that he lived with back to a semi-sane level, and he realized, hey, maybe I was wrong all these years? Or was it just, you know, he was out of his fucking mind?
The latter. I would go with the latter.
Yeah.
And I, yeah, uh-huh.
Just a crazy ass story of what that person is. So there you go, kids. That's the story of Fred Phelps. May God damn his soul. I don't say.
Hey, Mom. Hey, Dad. I know what I want to be when I grow up. Fred Phelps. No.
Yeah.
No. Stop it.
So I don't know what else to say about him. I think I've run out of energy talking about.
I'm still just confused of what you really think of this guy.
Yeah, I don't think I was clear.
And you'd like to have a cup of tea with him and just talk about life.
Is that how I came across? Is that really how I came across in my opinion of this dead man?
Love, tough love. You've heard it. People that you care about the most, you treat the most like shit.
Well, that was some tough fucking love, I guess. Jesus Christ. There you go. That wraps up today's episode of The Dark Side of Wikipedia. If you like our program, press subscribe wherever you download podcasts. Leave us a review there on Apple Podcasts. We greatly appreciate it. New episodes, of course, every single week, twice a week. So, yeah, hit that subscribe button. Until next time, for Sean and all of us at Dark Side of Wikipedia, I'm Tony Bruschi. Thanks for listening.